This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Big Football Show, a podcast by The Athletic about Big Ten football. Today is Wednesday, October 6th, and this is Scott Docterman, and I write about Iowa. Today, I'm joined by Penn State beat writer Audrey Snyder, and we break down a top five matchup pitting the teams we cover against one another. Audrey, it doesn't get much bigger than this, and I'm thrilled to be joined by you today. And what's kind of the mood in the tempo in Happy Valley right now?
You know, Scott, you said it was Wednesday, and I had to do a double take because it's just that kind of week. You know, it's when you're covering a game like this, everything's busier than usual. So, it is Wednesday. I'm glad we clarified that because I was unsure. We heard from James Franklin on Tuesday, and I think that the storyline for Penn State this week, I mean, obviously it's the big game, it's all of that, but it's really about this run game for the Nittany Lions, and we saw them getting going a little bit last week against Indiana, but they were not very good in third and short, Scott. That, to me, is a problem area heading into Saturday, and we're going to certainly be asking about that this week, and top running back Noah Cain has not looked as good as he has in the past. And you might remember, Scott, Kane's breakout game came 2 years ago as a freshman at Kinnick Stadium.
Yes, it did. And that was an interesting fourth quarter for Iowa because its middle linebacker, Christian Welch, who now plays for the Baltimore Ravens, had a stinger in that game, and they had to replace him with a freshman. And one change right there really enabled Penn State to close out the game. It was, 17-12, I think the final score was.
And, Scott, your memory is way better than mine. There was a controversial call in that game because I remember was, like, the pool reporter and trying to track down an official while this game's happening. I don't remember why, though.
I believe it was Pat Freiermuth scored, and then a replay of reversed it and put it at the 1 yard line. And I can't remember. I think Penn State had to kick a field goal out of that. And it seemed to me that he scored. I think everybody thought he scored a touchdown, but it was not, it was replayed and it was reversed. And so I think that was the controversy out of that game. Of course, it didn't affect the outcome, but certainly in the middle of the game, there were a lot of people who were pretty freaked about that, and understandably so. But this is an interesting series because I just saw, you know, Penn State hasn't been in a top five matchup since playing Arizona in 1999, which kind of surprised me.
I believe the Pigskin Classic, right?
Really?
I believe that's what Matt Brown's been dubbing it, and I trust him on all things Penn State history. So.
Yeah, I would too on just about everything history. I guess it surprised me more that Arizona was in the top five than Penn State played in a top five game in 1999. And Iowa's had a few of its own. That's had two since then. One in the Orange Bowl in 2002/3 against USC. Both teams were pretty good that year. And then the 4-5 game against Michigan State in the Big Ten championship in 2015. But this is different. You know, it's a regular season Big Ten game, and I think a lot of people here are comparing it to a 1985 clash, number one Iowa versus number two Michigan. But, you know, what's kind of the context? I mean, how are Penn State people viewing this matchup as far as big game designation?
It's huge. And I think both you and I, like before the season, we would have agreed like, hey, this is going to be a good game. It's going to be an interesting game just because of the history between these two teams, which you so wonderfully outlined on The Athletic for us already this week, that it's become this very organic, very good, entertaining rivalry without people cramming a trophy down our throats and talking about how they need to hate each other and that kind of thing. But I didn't think it was going to be this big of a game. Yeah. I mean, I did not think that Penn State would be a top five team after, you know, starting last year 0-5, and now they're 5-0, and you're just like, oh my gosh, what happened? But Scott, I guess kind of the ramifications here, are we maybe seeing a preview of the Big Ten title game Saturday in Kinnick Stadium? Like, there's still a ways to go, and I think the way Ohio State's kind of picking up steam right now, I mean – the rest of Penn State's schedule, it's been brutal so far in terms of difficulty with going into Camp Randall to open the year and then playing Auburn for the whiteout game. But you still got to look at who they have to play. And just this month, I mean, they close out Halloween weekend in Columbus, you know, and then you got Michigan in November. You got Michigan State to close out the year. And of course, you got Rutgers and Maryland in there too, for whatever good reason. But yeah, I just wonder if, I mean, obviously the game's huge, the magnitude's important, but if Penn State loses this game, what does it mean in the context of the college football playoff, in the context of the Big Ten, and whether or not Ohio State has maybe left that door open in the East just a crack? Heck, who knows? Maybe Michigan's in that conversation too.
Yeah, right now they are. We'll see what happens in the coming weeks. But I will say this, that I think that this game is equally important to both teams, but for two completely different reasons. I think you look at Iowa's schedule, and from here on out, I mean, Wisconsin clearly is not the team we expected Wisconsin to be. And that's really the one, you know, and maybe Nebraska, which has started to play better. Maybe that one is, you know, a good game as well. But there aren't any ranked opponents, let's say, on Iowa's schedule over the final six games. So in order for Iowa to stay in CFP consideration, I think they need this game. Because if they lose to, you know, Penn State, then people are going to start going, okay, who did they beat? Well, Indiana's not as good as people thought. Iowa State's already lost in the Big 12. I do think they're pretty good, frankly. But then the rest of the way, well, they didn't beat anybody with that's ranked. And even if they get in the Big 10 championship game and win, that may not vault them past a Cincinnati or an Oklahoma or a second SEC team. So I think it's for the CFP part of things for Iowa, this is vital. Now, on the flip side, I think for Penn State, it's about the Big Ten title, which, of course, it enables them to get to the fast track to the CFP because, as you said, they still have to play Ohio State, Michigan. Michigan State losing at Iowa would remove any kind of mulligan, any kind of accident, because if there's, say, a three-way tie or even a two-way tie and they don't win the tiebreaker, say with Ohio State, and Ohio State goes on to Indianapolis and wins, Penn State could still make the case, look, we only lost to Ohio State by 4 points or 7 points or whatever. We deserve that second playoff spot. But if you're 10-2, you don't. You're done with that. So I think that's really, to me, what's at stake is big picture for both teams. Equally important, but not the same. And then they're not in the same division, whether that matters or not, I don't know. But
actually, James Franklin was asked about that this week, about the divisions. And he said, you know, historically over time, you know, I think it might have either been you or somebody wrote this summer about it. But actually, I think it might have been you, the more I think about this, about kind of how the division breakdown has worked out over time. But James kind of had a little bit of a rebuttal to that, Scott, and kind of was like, well, I mean, historically, certain teams are clearly better than others and that type of thing. But yeah, I mean, it still comes back to this idea of divisions, and it's always going to be for Penn State, you've got to beat Ohio State. And that's going to, you know, and then this year, maybe it's Ohio State showing some human-like tendencies. Yeah. Maybe they're just starting to, you know, click things into gear right now. But yeah, I thought that was interesting because he did mention that, which of course he mentioned it in the summer as well. And I mean, division talk isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon. But here we are.
It's, you know, Penn State's been has the loudest voice against divisional play and than anybody, and it's partly because of the roadblock that they have. They look at the West and think of it as an easier path, at least to get to Indianapolis. And, you know, over time, it's, you know, this year is a little bit different. It's a little skewed because Wisconsin's not playing very well. But it was, I looked it over when they split geographically, it's been 66-60 east over West, which is pretty close. You know, but Ohio State's what skews it the whole way.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
You know, they're in a league of their own, and everybody, and then there's like a second tier of Penn State. You know, Michigan, except for last year, and Wisconsin and Iowa are kind of in that next year, and then it kind of filters from there. But I think when we get next year, the schedule will change, but the teams on it won't. But in 2023, that's when things are going to probably change, and it's probably going to go to an eight-game season, Big Ten season. There, you know, I've discussed it, but there's a lot of talk that it's going to go to maybe three permanent opponents, and then you cycle through everybody else 2 years on, 2 years off. That might create a mess for Indianapolis, but a couple of times I'm sure you're going to get some 7-1 teams that tie and didn't play, and you're like, okay, what's the tiebreaker here? But, you know, so, you know, it's interesting because you look at Ohio State, they've lost 4 games in the Big Ten since they were split in 2014. And the 2 biggest ones were to the West teams, Purdue and Iowa. And then, of course, they lost by that block field goal, Penn State.
Penn State, 16. Yeah, the scoop and score, yeah.
And then Michigan State the year before in a field goal on the last play of the game. So they've all been memorable because that didn't happen very often. But I think...
But Scott, you must be memorable because James Franklin pointed you out, or not you, but pointed that stat out, so... I think that means he's reading your work, Scott.
Well, that's good to know. But, he's right in that Penn State has an earlier blockage than the mm-hmm. people in the West. And that's true. But the problem is that the West has a blockage, too. And that's Ohio State. That's 1-4 straight. And I still think if they get it rolling, they're a tough team to stop. They just have that offense that – you're going to have to turn them over a lot and frustrate them, which I know the team I cover can do.
I was going to say, that's a turnover city there.
Yeah, plus 12 leading the country in that, and 16.
Penn State's plus 6.
Right. Penn State's doing a great job of that, too. But then again, I look at Iowa offensively, and it's kind of, it's gridlock as always. But can they keep up?
I believe, as James Franklin put it, it's play action, play action, play action. And that's what Penn State's preparing for this week. But I do think, Scott, I mean, that's the – Franklin didn't shy away from talking about it on Tuesday, the fact that, yeah, Iowa's defense is really good, but the thing that they're doing exceptionally well are the takeaways. And that's kind of – I mean, it's the numbers are jarring when you see it. I mean, because for Penn State, it was, okay, you were minus 8 last year in the turnover margin. You're plus 6 here. This year, they've been doing a great job with it. But then you look at Iowa and you're like, how in the world, like, how is this even possible? Mm-hmm. You know, but that to me is the thing that, again, you go back to Sean Clifford in the storyline all offseason was, well, is he going to be turnover prone again? And he's done a really nice job of controlling the ball. He's been probably about as much improved as one could realistically hope or expect. But you wonder if that is going to be the turning point Saturday afternoon.
Oh, you're right. And the one thing in trying to examine this, because a lot of people are going, and myself, at times you're like, this is unsustainable. You just can't rely on 7 turnovers in a road game the way that happened last week. And that's true. You're not going to get most people are going to do that. But at the same time, the majority, almost all of these turnovers have been forced turnovers. They've been based on good reads on the way they've contacted the player with the ball. There have been a couple, there's been one where there was a bad mesh point against, I think it was Colorado State. Another where there was a tipped ball against Indiana that they picked off in the air. But a lot of them have been read well, positioned well, forced by the defensive line, into interceptions. And then they have a very skilled secondary. And since 2017, they have 76 interceptions, which is by far the most in the country. And they've had, and their recruits aren't 4- or 5-star guys. I mean, but they are elite level players, the All-American caliber players because of the way that they've been coached. And so
but we can't tell Ari Wasserman that, Scott. We better hope he's not listening.
Iowa, if I want to channel my inner James Franklin, I would say I would use Iowa as the rebuttal, Wisconsin to an extent too, on most cases, but on the 5-star type thing, because when they do get them, they're pretty good, but they don't get them very often. But they still, from 2012 to 2018, they still had 4 of the defensive backs of the year, and only one of them had a Power 5 offer, and that was to play running back. That was Desmond King. So, they've done
some
good work. 2 of them are 2-stars. Micah Hyde's still in the NFL as a pretty good player.
Familiar name there, Scott.
Yeah. Josh Jackson and Imani Hooker. So, they've had some good players there, and that's just continuing. I don't know if that any of these 5 starting defensive backs are as good as they are, but they're all veteran. They've all have at least 3 years of starting experience, and they really know where to go. And last year they caused some problems for Penn State too, which I think that was kind of the tail end of the Penn State rough.
The slide. Yeah, the 0-5 slide.
That was wild looking back, because I remember listening to you and on your podcast with Matt Brown, and it was like, this is there was nothing you could say about it at that point. It was like, this team's horrible. And then here we are, 9 straight wins for Penn State since then. You turn it around. I mean, what's kind of been the secret, or
they're proving, you know, week in and week out that last year was the anomaly, which kind of all offseason, that was their hope, right? It was this was just a COVID year. It was really weird, that type of thing. But to me, it's two things. And the interesting part about it is that it's both sides of the ball are a heck of a lot better. And I'll start with the Penn State defense and the fact that they had Scott, which is pretty insane. They only had 4 interceptions all of last year, which again, 9 game season, but still. Mm-hmm. They surpassed that mark by like week 2 or week 3 this year. And so they're creating a lot of takeaways. They're also tackling. I mean, it was the tackling early on last season was really, really bad. I mean, it got to the point where defensive coordinator Brent Pry was like, yeah, this is like to the point where it was almost embarrassing. I mean, it was that shoddy. But they've been much improved this year. They've got the versatility on this defense, and they've got the athletes to make it work. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's, you know, you kind of talk about recruiting and development. Well, they've got some, you know, some high 4 stars on this defense. You got a former 5-star in linebacker Brandon Smith, but you know their Sam linebacker Curtis Jacobs. He was a guy who was a safety and a receiver in high school, and he's got that rangy ability that's hard to find. And so you've got all this versatility, and they also blitz a ton. I wrote a story about it last week. Their blitz percentages are pretty wild. I mean, it's like you've got to expect that they're going to be bringing pressure because they're doing so on like, I want to say it was like 45-46% of downs. They're bringing the heat. So that's like really made them effective. They've been tremendous in the red zone. You know, you saw it against Wisconsin. That was the difference in the game. Mm-hmm. But the red zone defense has been really, really outstanding. But the other part of it, too, of this turnaround, Mike Yurcich coming in as a new offensive coordinator. They got rid of Kirk Shiraka after just 1 season. And the whole thing was, can Yurcich remake and rebuild Sean Clifford? And it's been a hell of a job. I mean, it really has been interesting to watch this take fold. I mean, you're seeing Sean Clifford now extending plays with his legs. But when he's on the move, he's looking to throw. He's not just putting his head down and running. And, you know, it's really paying off for this offense. And kind of the troublesome area that I mentioned earlier is this run game and just trying to get that going a little bit. But really, yeah, I mean, you have Jahan Dotson. They're getting him involved a lot of ways. Yurcich has really pushed the tempo. And Scott, I feel like because Penn State has cycled through so many offensive coordinators during James Franklin's time here, it feels like right now that everything Franklin was promising Yurcich that he was going to be and all these things, that it's coming true. And that, you know, that hasn't always been the case here. You know, you promise tempo, you deliver on tempo. And so it's really been, quite a turnaround for sure.
For sure. And I remember last year there was a quarterback controversy with Will Levis. But, you know, before he became a sensation with the Bananas and stuff.
And he puts, I saw this last week, Colton Pouncey, our colleague, say mayonnaise in his coffee. Like, what is this?
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, it came down between Iowa and Penn State to begin with, and when he decided to go with, and he went with Penn State. Now I'm like, yeah, that's, and all 3 teams, you know, that he considered are now undefeated, including Kentucky, where he's at now. But bananas raw and mayonnaise in his coffee. I mean, I don't know where to begin with some of this stuff. But
that's just insane. I did see on Twitter he had his offensive lineman to a steakhouse, and I was just really fearful to find out what he did to a steak. So
yeah,
we'll let that mystery live, Scott.
Ketchup and mustard? I don't know. Exactly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I think with Sean Clifford and having that controversy, there's a lot of things that can happen with quarterbacks. They can kind of go south or transfer, or they can rise up and play well. And he certainly has. I mean, complete 67% of his passes. 11 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He's a good runner, not a great runner, but you know, I think one key for Iowa is probably to keep him a little bit in the pocket, because if they get exposed on a lane, then he'll take it. And you know, it's 3rd and 5, and you know, that's what Iowa's quarterback doesn't do and really can't do unless it's, you know, a completely open field, and that's take off with the ball and run. And you know, Ferentz said this week that Dotson's the best receiver that he's going to see all year. And that's saying something, considering the opener he had Freifogel, who was the Big Ten defensive, or
who was passing, you know, who was a non-factor last week. Yeah. I mean, Penn State really, really did a nice job,
and Iowa did too in the opener. And then week two against Iowa State, Xavier Hutchinson was a first-team All Big 12 receiver. It was really a non-factor. Last week, Dante Demas, unfortunate injury for him. He looked really good, and I thought he was a tremendous receiver. But Dotson's at a different level. He really, you know, went on and on and on about how good he was. Probably more than I've heard him talk about an individual player in a long time. So he's definitely a threat. He's a guy that they're worried about on the back end. And then, you know, the running game is fascinating to me, because I think both teams are very comparable in this. It's like, when are they going to get going? And Noah Kane, as we saw a couple of years ago at Kinnick, you know, had a great – he kind of became the guy in my eyes at that point, because he had
Journey the moment.
Brown and
a bunch of guys. And, you know, it's here's this freshman from IMG Academy who, you know, was playing a little bit and then has the breakout game and then gets hurt. And then you don't see him again until the Cotton Bowl. Yeah. And then – opening drive last year at Indiana, gets hurt, misses the whole season.
And, you know, what is fascinating to me about this is there's so many comparable factors that both teams have. They struggle running the football. They do have kind of veteran quarterbacks. Offensive line has good players that you kind of want to see more from. Defense have been great. The secondaries, I think Penn State's as athletic a secondary as there is in the country. I really like Brisker. I think he is.
Yeah.
he's probably the best one.
You know, it's been going into this season, it was something that James Franklin had said a few times, that he thought this was going to be their best secondary since he's been here. And I mean, it's proven to be true. And Jaquan Brisker is such a big reason for that. I mean, you kind of look at his path, goes to Lackawanna College in Scranton, comes into Penn State, and now you've got both of your starting safeties are guys who were at Lackawanna who've, you know, stepped up. Jair Brown, the other safety, I mean, he's leading the team right now in interceptions. I mean, he's just looks like a center fielder back there at times. And you've got Joey Porter Jr., who's playing really well, and Tariq Castro Fields is the other corner. I mean, I do agree that this is their best secondary since Franklin's been here.
Yeah, and you know, I think talent-wise, they're probably a little bit beyond what Iowa does. Iowa minimizes the talent factor based on the way they play, and then, of course, their experience level. And in a lot of cases, they're very underrated, you know, position by position. I mean, Matt Hankins has started for 5 years. You know, he came back for, you know, the year. He started as a true freshman in 2017.
That's wild.
Yeah. So, you know, Riley Moss started as a true freshman in 2018. And you know, Kayvon Merriweather and Jack Kerner were kind of battling in 19, and both of them had starts, and then Dane Belton has also started since 19. So they've got a lot of experience. They've got probably two players on the bench who are as good as anybody on the lineup, so that anybody gets dinged or, you know, they're not, it's not going to be a letdown where it might be in another position or two. But I really like the way these secondaries play. I think that will impact the game, if not in interceptions. I think it will on play calling, and I think it will positional. I can see both of these teams playing a little bit more risk averse than normal, which is you get to the plus 50 and it's third and five, third and six, and you're like, you know, instead of trying to attack the middle of the field, do you really want to do that? Or do you want to just say, let's see what we can get, you know, maybe throw the ball in the flat. And if we don't get the first down, it's no sin to punt. And I know fans are going to be like, but you know, that's, you got to win the game.
Penn State's punter, Jordan Stout, he's been remarkable. I mean, he was Ray Guy punter of the week this week, which is, I mean, I feel like that's what you got to have going into Penn State, Iowa. I mean, we've got to talk about the punters, right? Like it's a must.
Both of them are fantastic. I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, Stout was the punter of the week, and Torrey Taylor has been an absolute weapon for this team, and they have the coverage to match. So he was Big Ten punter of the year last year as a true freshman, although he's 24 years old, so he's from Australia. so I think he probably leaves after this year and goes to the NFL. But field position is going to be out of those. To me, in a game like this, you've got kind of what they are, and then you also have the factors that always figure in, which are turnovers and penalties and injuries. Those are things you can't really rely on, so you just kind of move those over here. But field position is going to play such a pivotal role, and it has in the past. I remember the 2017 game, which I think is one of the most entertaining games I've ever seen. And it was in Iowa City, play of the game.
The Juwan Johnson game. Yeah.
And for the first half or so, Iowa couldn't – I mean, they had a safety because they were just backed up constantly. And then boom, they score a touchdown at the end of the half when Josie Jewell intercepts Trace McSorley on a tip. And then it kind of goes back and forth. But field position played a huge role in that game. And so I don't know. And when we talk about history – nobody in Iowa, nobody in Pennsylvania will sit there and go, that's our number one rival or anything like that. You know, I can't wait to win this trophy. But there are a lot of, I won't say garbage trophies, but there are a lot of just trinkets.
We've seen the Land-Grant trophy, Scott.
Yes, exactly.
We've seen that a few times, yeah.
Yeah, and the governor's victory bell against Minnesota. I mean, is there a more useless trophy than that? I mean,
yeah, I mean, this one, it's been entertaining. I mean, I remember the Adrian Claiborne blocked punt. I was a student at that point, and I just remember the feeling in the stadium where it was just like this big deflation and like it was just dejection and it was a downpour and people were like super, super miserable. But yeah, the game you referenced, the Juwan Johnson game, what I remember from that is I remember being down on the field because, you know, last play of the game, we had sideline access. And I remember being right there alongside Penn State's bench and taking video of it. And like, you know, the crowd is just stunned. I still have seen the replay probably 100 times. And like, I still don't know how McSorley fit that ball in that tight of a window. And Deshaun Hamilton's coming across the back and looks like he thinks the ball's for him. But what I remember is Saquon Barkley going up to the fans behind him. And I'm thinking, oh, what is going to happen here? Like, I've got, you know, my phone video rolling. And he like went up to him and thanked them because they were chirping at him all game. And he loved that. And like, I asked him about it afterward. And he's like, yeah, I saw the video. You caught me. Like I was, you know, like he was just really enjoying it because it's such a special atmosphere. I love Kinnick Stadium and the way the fans are right on top of the sideline. Like it's just, it's so great. And these games have lived up to the hype that, you know, when the schedule came out, Scott, that's one of those road trips that I'm like, this is going to be awesome because it just always seems to live up to it. But yeah, just tremendous games. And I think we're probably going to be spoiled again Saturday. I hope. Watch, we're going to talk all of this and something crazy is going to happen. I mean, Penn State, James Franklin mentioned it, which I think is a good point while we were talking about punters. Penn State is going to be preparing for all kinds of trick plays on special teams, because we've seen Iowa use quite a few of those over the years. They burned Penn State with the same play twice. And James Franklin said they went back this week, and he claims they found every trick play Iowa has ever run, and that they're going to spend time on that this week. So, yeah, that's you got to kind of be ready for anything. But when you have two defenses that are this good, you might be right about that risk averse, because Penn State against Auburn, they were willing to take those gambles because of their defense. But again, that was Auburn. That's it's a little different.
Right, yeah. And Bo Nix is an interesting quarterback. Spencer Petras is too, but they're different styles, of course. I just, you know, in thinking back to all the games between these teams and you know, it really parallels Ferentz coming into the league. He's from Pittsburgh. His brother-in-law played at Penn State. His father-in-law was great friends with Joe Paterno. There was rumors seemingly for a generation he was going to replace Paterno, and you know, and he never did. He wanted to stay at Iowa, but there was just been. I mean, the 6-4 game's legendary for the score.
Yeah.
I hope it does.
Iconic, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of hope it stays. There's no 6-4 on Saturday. I mean, like, see at least a few big offensive plays, but every play was like each team was like hanging on the edge of their, of a mountain, trying to stay afloat before everything falls apart. You know, in 08, I was there when, you know, Penn State was 9-0, ranked 3rd in the country, had a chance, should have went on to the. Excuse me. Sorry.
See, he's allergic. He starts talking 6-4 and he starts sneezing.
I know, 6-4. I'm allergic to, you know, 16-14 works for me, but 6-4. But you know, Penn State was 9-0, ranked 3rd in the country, and was really ready to take that step and go to the BCS title game. And then Iowa just kept punching and won on the last, you know, play of the game. And then we'll talk about the 17 game. And then there's been, you know, a couple of painful ones for Iowa, too. And that 18 in Penn State, I mean, they're up. They had two safeties. Two safeties in the first quarter, I would say. And at the end of the game, you know, Penn State swings it completely the other way, takes the lead by like 10 points. And then Iowa scores, gets down to the 3-yard line with like 3 minutes to go. And when rewatching the tape, you've got Noah Fant, who's an outstanding tight end, in the slot. And you have a receiver to his left. They're both looking at each other kind of like, what's going on? And Iowa has 3 timeouts. Call timeout. Nobody knows what's going on. So they called the play. Noah Fant standing there at the snap. And then there's an interception.
The Nick Scott pick. Yes. Yeah, I was standing right there in the end zone because, again, we had field access. It was late in the game. And I remember taking a video of that particular play as it unfolded. And you're just like, oh, my gosh, here's another. Mm-hmm. And that one probably goes under the radar, too, Scott, because everybody was so spoiled by the year before with the Juwan Johnson play. But, yeah, that ending was wild, too.
Yeah, and you know, and then, as you mentioned, Noah Kane 2 years ago kind of came of age, and there was a great catch from an Iowa receiver, Brandon Smith, at, you know, late in the game that turned it almost into a, you know, a comeback. And then last year was kind of the anomaly in the other way, in some ways, like 2016, which I've never seen a better called game by an opponent than 2016 with Joe Moorhead.
Yeah.
He knew the pressure points for Iowa, the weaknesses, and that was weak side linebacker and strong safety, and he just completely rocked it. almost 600 yards. It was just incredible to watch. Just he knew exactly where he would attack on every play, and then he had a quarterback and a running back and receivers who could execute it. So it's just been a phenomenal series, and it's unfortunate it cycles off in some ways just because we're kind of robbed of these great games, because even if you finally get to, you know, got to go to Camp Randall this year, and I finally got to go to Maryland. But
was it everything you hoped it'd be in March, Scott? Did they still have the Chick-fil-A in the press box?
They did, yes.
Okay, because I've got to look forward to that next month. So
I was kind of disappointed, though, that they didn't have any Diet Pop. And I'm like, you know, I'm diabetic.
Diet Pop. That's a pop. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Soda? Sorry. Is that what you call it?
Yeah. Geographical differences. Here we are.
Yes. 800 miles means a lot when it comes to the beverage market. But when What do you, when you see Penn State running, what's been the difficulty, and what can they do against a team that's obviously pretty good against the run? I mean, you know, they're allowing mm-hmm. 2.5 yards per carry or less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to quote James Franklin, it's a combination of things. and so they wanted to go into this season to have three running backs to work through this rotation, which has been their thing for a few years. So, like, that part really wasn't abnormal. But then you look at it, and Noah Cain never really got going. And then against the Villanova game, he had one carry and was on the sideline. And it was kind of like, okay, is he hurt? Are they just resting him because it's Villanova? And James Franklin acknowledged after the game that Cain was trying to work through something that he'd been banged up in practice that week. So we go to practice last week. Cain is practicing. Watch him go through warmups. The broadcast says it was a game time decision. He gets the green light, and he just looked hobbled. I mean, there was a play that I cut up in my Upon Further Review piece for Monday on The Athletic where, I mean, he's just like jogging back toward the line of scrimmage, and he just looks uncomfortable. And so you're thinking, all right, you know, is this your best option when he noticeably looks hobbled? And I asked James Franklin about it yesterday, and he said that, you know, Noah's trying to work through something, but at this point in the year, everybody's banged up and whatnot. So I'm curious what they do with this rotation, because you have Kevon Lee, who's become the number two back, but then he had a fumbling issue. So then you got John Lovett, who's the Baylor grad transfer, who we found out was unavailable for the first two games. So it's been a mix of things. And of course, the offensive line. There have been good moments. There have been some not good moments. Left guard was the point coming into this year where they needed somebody to step up. And they've got Harvard grad transfer Eric Wilson, who's become the starter after not being the guy week one at Wisconsin. So it's been interesting just because that was the one area where coming into the year, I would say, yeah, Penn State's running backs, deepest position group on the team. And they just haven't lived up to it so far. And, I mean, you've got Devin Ford in there as well, who hasn't been much of a factor. I mean, they've used him in some two-back stuff. He's a kick returner as well. But, yeah, it's not – Cain just has not looked right the last couple weeks. And to me, that's going to be something still. You know, we'll go to practice tonight. We'll see what we can see in warm-ups and individual drills. But I still think it's going to be something to keep an eye on in warm-ups because he didn't look right last week.
That's interesting. You know, and on the other side for Iowa, when it comes to the running game, it's a little bit perplexing because they do have pretty good running backs. I mean, Tyler Goodson, had 80 plus yards, you know, running and pass receiving last week. First team All Big Ten running back last year. I think he ended up with third in rushing yards, and that was only because Iowa didn't get a chance to play in a bowl game when Mizzou backed out. But he's really a very good player. And Ivory Kelly Martin behind him has been a nice player. He had a couple fumbles in a game and he got sat down, but they were really hard hits. They weren't because he was holding the ball out or doing anything stupid. So he's back, and they both have a really nice 1-2 punch. And then up front, Tyler Linderbaum's still the best center in the country, but they've had a lot of really weird pieces. A lot of moving parts at tackle. They're starting to get settled down there, but they still have some work to do, and they've had some injuries at guard, and they've been moving guys around. They've had a true freshman start the last 2 weeks. He's going to be really good, but today, he's got a lot of work to do. And then their fifth-year senior who started is, broke his foot baling hay.
That sounds like the most Iowa injury possible, Scott.
Yeah, he's a small-town farm kid and was baling hay and jumped off the machine and broke his foot.
That's incredible, and I'm glad that you mentioned the center, because that is one matchup that James Franklin highlighted on Tuesday. And Penn State defensive tackle PJ Mustafa has been playing really, really well this year. It's to me like if they're listening to this, Scott, I think our legends and listeners are hardcore football fans. If you want to watch a battle in the trenches, that's going to be it, because PJ Mustafa has really been playing well too. So that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I think these two players may be going against each other quite a bit in the next level. And Iowa's had some great centers over the years. The last three multi-year centers are still in NFL and still on NFL rosters, and that's going back 10 plus years. Linderbaum's clearly the best out of them. It's not really close, and that's saying a lot. James Daniels was really good. He's a starter with the Bears. Mm-hmm. You know, James Ferentz, Kirk's son, is still on the Patriots roster, and Austin Blythe's with the Chiefs. So, but he's the best, and he can do things that he's not really bulky necessarily. He's about a 290-pound center, but nobody can do the reach blocks he can. Nobody can execute the zone. And then, of course, when he gets to people, he doesn't just merely block them. He tries to put them into the ground. So it's pretty fun to watch. But the passing game for Penn State, I think this is where it I'm not saying this is exactly where the game is going to be won or lost for either team, but I think this is where you could see kind of the plus 10, minus 10 scale a little bit, which is Penn State has the ability to get down the field, no question, and Dotson is good or better receiver than there is in the league, and there are a lot of good ones. But, of course, Iowa's been adept at taking the ball away. What do you see? What has been the key in this passing attack? And what does Penn State need to do there?
Yeah, I think it's been – part of it's been the creativity with Mike Yurcich, where it seems like every week you're seeing something new or different. I mean, we'll see him come out there sometimes with three tight ends. They've gone to this wildcat package in the goal line. We've seen a lot of two-back stuff. I mean, it's just really – creative, and it's honestly it's fun to watch, Scott, and maybe it's just because last year was so bad to watch this offense that now you're just like, oh cool, this is great. You're just not running 8 million fades a game. But I think part of the success of the passing game is that they do have the depth in the receiving core. You've got Parker Washington as your number two, mm-hmm. receiver Keandre Lambert-Smith is your number three, and you've got three really good tight ends, which is kind of the interesting part, because you look at Penn State and last year, you know, you lose Pat Freiermuth partway through the season, and you've got Brenton Strange and Theo Johnson who have to come in and step up. And that experience for those two tight ends was huge. And I remember writing it last year, and I kept saying, well, you know what? It's pretty much a lost season at 0-5, but maybe this is a silver lining that you're going to find out right away what you've got in these two tight ends. And Theo Johnson was a four-star kid. And so, I mean, you're getting these guys that – you remember that name.
Yes, I remember
that
name. And so are the fans behind the Penn State bench. I guarantee.
Yeah, I was – that's – I'll have to look out for that now, Scott. That's going to be a fun wrinkle. I forgot about that. Because, Michigan was very much wanting Theo Johnson too, and it was a really fascinating recruitment. And the thing is, you know, you've got these tight ends, and you're not shying away from using them. But it's also, I mean, it's the creativity, and it's Sean Clifford playing a heck of a lot better. And you mentioned the completion percentage. His completion percentage through five games is higher than it was last year and higher than it was in 2019. I mean, he's taking the check down, which might sound kind of crazy, but it's like, this is what, you know, this is what they want you to do. And it's kind of, you know, there's always that game manager connotation, and that's what they want him to do. And he's doing it, and they're winning games. I mean, I think this is... Last year, it was so much of Clifford trying to force the ball and pressing to make plays, and that's what you're seeing this year. You're seeing the opposite of that. Their passing game is really good, and I'm just curious what they do with Jahan Dotson, because, I mean, Penn State will get him involved in speed sweeps. We've seen Jahan Dotson throw two passes this year, which has been another kind of fun, creative wrinkle. And then, you know, down around the goal line, we've seen the wildcat package with Tyler Warren, their number three tight end, who is a high school quarterback. So you've got the guy, you know, to do it. So to me, that's kind of the exciting part about it. But, Scott, what should Penn State fans be looking for from Iowa's offense? Because it's play action, play action, play action, right?
Well, that's what it was last week.
Yeah.
That's not what – I mean, that's what they would like to do, of course, but Maryland played right into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, their defensive end crashed every time, and it's like, okay, well, let's just boot every time. Yeah. And tight end in the flat, okay, there's 10, 12 yards, and they were happy to take it. And so, yes, play action works. You've got to run the football to make it work, that's the problem for them right now. I mean, their running game is on the same level as Penn State's. It's like, get going. And the zone blocking scheme, one guy misses his block, doesn't, you know, falls down, trips, gets beat, whatever. It can doom the play and doom it quite easily. And I think in the passing game, though, this is what's kind of fascinating, because Iowa has a couple of tight ends of their own that are really ascending. I mean, they're not quite Fanton Hawkinson yet, but they are improving rapidly. Sam Laporta has more catches per game than any of the tight ends have had in the Ferentz era. Wow. And you look at the number two, and they run 12 personnel all the time. Mm-hmm. Luke Lachey, his dad's Jim Lachey, former All-American at Ohio State, NFL All-Pro and tackle. And he's bulked up now. He's 6'6", 250. He came in at like 6'6", 210. But, he's had some pancake blocks. He's really athletic. So,
and probably a lot of pancakes to get to that weight.
Yeah, he's had to have a lot. And I think COVID probably helped him gain weight like it did me. Unfortunately, we're body types.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The passing game has been interesting this year because the first couple of games, and this was discussed a lot with Iowa, that Petras didn't have to do a lot. He didn't do a lot. And it frustrated a lot of fans, especially. And you're kind of wondering, okay, what is this? But in looking at those two games against those teams in that point in time, both of those teams they're ranked higher than Iowa. And at that point, when Iowa was turning them over, getting big leads, it's like, let's not do anything to let them back in the game. And if that means take the sack, throw the ball away, do it. And so his completion percentage was low. His productivity was kind of low, too. But when you're at Iowa State, which is a pressure cooker environment, especially for Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
All you'd have, if you would have thrown an interception trying to force a ball somewhere, it would have changed the dynamic of that game in a heartbeat. So it made perfect sense. Now, the last 2 weeks, he stacked his best game on top of his last best game. And I think that's really important. Against Maryland, he's showing an ability to hit multiple targets at multiple levels, both in the flat if he needs to, center of the field, and then deep. And he's had some really nice deep passes. I do am concerned, though, that, what is he going to do against the secondary? Because the secondary is – again, as talented as they'll come. I thought Indiana's was really good, but I think Penn State's is better. And so I do think that that's going to be a concern. But they've got two freshman wide receivers, Keegan Johnson and Arlen Bruce, who have really emerged as two of the better receivers in that core. And as they continue to grow, this passing game is going to continue to take steps forward, and they're going to be difference makers, and they have been the last 2 weeks. So I think it's going to be – They're certainly not dynamic, I would say. A lot of people just classify them as, they're Iowa, leave it at that. But when you do have an elite level defense that takes the ball away and a special teams that matches, sometimes the better part of of discretion is just, okay, let's not screw it up. Let's just continue to play field position football. Let them make the mistake. We know they will. And take advantage of it when they have the opportunity to take his place.
And I wanted to go back to something you said, Scott, about the point with him making these throws, but this being a good secondary. Penn State also, like I mentioned before, how they're blitzing at one of the highest rates in the country, but they also are doing a much better job disguising it. And that's kind of been the interesting part. I spent that week with Villanova a few weeks ago with the Wildcats coaching staff, and it was really interesting sitting in on their film sessions, and the OC is just like, yeah, like we don't even know what this blitz is, because it was kind of described to me as if you're spinning a wheel, it's like whatever the wheel lands on is what they're running. And it's just, it's so crazy. But that's what Penn State's doing, which I don't know. I think from a game planning perspective, it kind of makes you wonder if you're Iowa and you say, okay, well, you're going to do all this. Like, what is Penn State's base defense if you're running all these blitzes, right? Because mm-hmm. people game plan to try and beat that base defense, where I feel like Iowa's thing is always like, hey, and James Franklin even mentioned it this week. He's like, the smartest people take the most complex things and make them very simple.
Yes.
And that's the Iowa defense. And Franklin's like, yeah, I love it. And clearly it works, but like, you don't love it on Saturday, you know? Yeah. And so I think that's kind of the differences with these two defenses, where you could say Penn State be like, well, all right, you're playing really well, but you're doing it in a little bit of a helter-skelter fashion with all these blitzes.
Well, in some ways, and I think this is a credit to both programs, mm-hmm. is that they play the defenses that work to their recruiting base.
Yes.
Penn State recruits yep. at a higher level, so it's enabled players to play more athletically.
Yes.
Blitz more, one-on-one coverage, man coverage mm-hmm. if necessary, do all those things, one-on-one matchups. Okay. You know, hey, if you got the players, do it, and you could be really successful. Iowa is a developmental program. They do get some high-level players, and I would say at linebacker, they definitely have yeah. two of the best in the country, and Jack Campbell, who I think is the best in the country, and Justin Jacobs, who's up there. He's a four-star who from Southwest Ohio, committed to Iowa, and then Ohio State came in with a late offer and then still stuck with the Hawkeyes, so they feel pretty good about that one. But
got to take those wins when you can get
yeah,
them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. They don't happen very often. But they play a very disciplined style, quarters mm-hmm. coverage, be where you're supposed to be. This marker is in this coverage. You are here, and you're here always. And then you can take risks when you know what you're doing. But until then, you play this style, and it's just kind of like a contraption in some ways. It's
yeah.
like you're here, and there's not, you know, and you, and then they have a pretty aggressive front, but it's usually a four man run, and also what helps them is they don't stack the box. Very mm-hmm. rarely do they have eight men in the box, so they try to stop the run with two gap technique up front, and then let their linebackers run free to the ball. And Josie Jewell did a nice job of that in the past.
Yeah.
And Jack Campbell's better than he is. So so they've been able to live with that. But I think that's what's fascinating to me is when you have teams that, you know, Wisconsin and Iowa are kind of on one side where they're developmental programs and they play to a certain scheme and a style, and they you know, take it to the nth level
yeah.
and do a great job with it. Whereas Penn State and probably Michigan are kind of a little more varied in that they have great athletes, better talent, but sometimes great talent doesn't always play disciplined, at least the way
yeah.
it does in Iowa. So I think that's, to me, kind of a fascinating development between the two teams. But, hey, if you could play either style and do it effectively, do it.
And yeah, it's clearly working for both of them. You know, it's just two totally different styles, but it's working right now. And it's also kind of, I mean, Penn State fans, I don't know if spoiled is the right word, but I certainly was spoiled last week watching Micah McFadden. You know, you talk about good linebackers in this
yes.
conference and you're like, oh my gosh, I mean, some of Penn State's short yardage issues, it was Micah McFadden blowing things up,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so that's kind of, that's going to be the thing. What does Penn State do on third and four or less? And they might throw the ball, Scott. I mean,
yeah.
that's kind of where they're at, where, you know, you're having more success through the air. But when everybody, you know, in the stadium knows that you're going to run the ball and you can't do it, that has to be concerning, especially when you're going to Iowa.
Yeah. And it's funny because you say that and it's exactly the same thing here.
Yeah.
That's the way they want to play. If they get in a 4-minute offense and they're up 16-13 and they get the ball at their 31 after a punt, they want to be able to run the clock out, and I don't think they can. I don't think
mm-hmm.
they could against this defense, first of all, but just the way that they're playing, they haven't been able to prove that they're going to be able to get the first down by run, maybe play action pass for 5 yards, pick up the first down, and then run, do, you know, and maybe get there. And I don't think either team can do that, and I think both teams' defenses are too good to let it happen. So, I mean, this is – to me, it seems like it's going to be kind of a – you know, it sets up anyway as a low-scoring game, where there's going to be 3 to 4 plays that really make the difference. And I think one could come in Penn State's passing game. I think a deep post crossing route or something like that from Dotson, 50 yards, could change the game. I think a turnover, obviously, on Iowa's end of things. And I think field position football really – if you have somebody shanks a punt, you know, somebody hits a 65 yarder, you know, things like that, I think really can change the outcome of a game where things can be this close.
Do you have a prediction, Scott? Are you there yet?
Am I
putting you on the spot?
Yeah, a little bit. No, I'm going to, I like Iowa at home, but not by much. I think it's kind of one of these field goal games on paper to where, you know, the one thing that has somewhat impressed me about Iowa is that they don't turn the ball over. That Spencer Petras has had one interception all year since throwing three against Northwestern in week two last year. He's had three, you know, in this 11-game win streak for Iowa. So he knows what to do with the ball. He's, you know, he is a game manager, and he's making plays in the passing game. So I think if they do get in those situations, he's not going to make the big mistake. Whereas, dare I say, I've seen Clifford make the big mistake before. Not so much this year, but in the past he has made the big mistake.
Yeah, I've already filed my pick, Scott. And now my confidence level in the pick, that's a totally different story. but I actually, which Penn State fans might, I don't know, they might be shocked to hear this, but I'm actually picking Penn State 21, Iowa 20. Again, I think Penn State's offense, what it's able to do, the big plays that it can make, I think that's going to be the difference maker. But I also feel like, Scott, it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a close game. Very high likelihood that I'm also wrong. That happens quite a bit. So,
I was wrong earlier this year with Iowa going to Iowa State. I thought this was Iowa State's this was Iowa State's year to win this game, and it really kind of bounced the other way. But anything's possible, as we know in college football. And you know, Penn State's won three straight at Kinnick, and that doesn't happen very often. So I don't anticipate them coming in with any kind of nervous. I mean, it's going to be loud. It's going to be abrasive, but they have had success here. And you know, a lot of them, including Clifford, played 2 years ago when they won at night. And, you know,
and I think this is also where, you know, going to Camp Randall week one, this is where it helps you. You know, you've been in that hostile road environment already this year.
Yeah, were the fans there, you know, before halftime, though, the students?
You know what, Scott, I remember because we had talked about this before the game, and you were exactly right. It was a very late-arriving student crowd, and then once I walked outside the stadium pregame and saw beer bongs off of, like, rooftops, I understood why. I absolutely understood why they were late-arriving.
Yeah, well, while we're here, we should probably spin around the Big Ten and look at Michigan dominating Wisconsin. That's something. It was a complete reversal of last year, where Michigan could not have played worse and Wisconsin played its best game. So what do we make of this? What do we make of the Wolverines? Let's start there. And they play at Nebraska this week, which is fascinating. But I mean, are the Wolverines for real? Are they a team that everybody should go, okay, this is Michigan's back? Or is it, yeah, but they've played, you know, Washington and Wisconsin aren't very good, and they're kind of taking advantage of all of these teams.
You know, I've been, the last few years, I've been in the Michigan's got to show me something crowd, the I'm tired of buying into the preseason hype and nothing happens crowd. Dare I say, Scott, I think this is for real. I think.
Okay.
Now, watch the count lay an egg this weekend and make me look like an idiot. But I was actually able to watch a good portion of that game. Maybe that's like the one silver lining of Penn State having a night game, is that you're actually able to watch some of these other games. And yeah, this to me is a really good Michigan team. And I'm, you know, I'm always looking at it from the Penn State perspective, and it's like, Penn State, you know, you think you're getting Michigan in Beaver Stadium later in the year. You know, the game's been a bit of a letdown in the past, but I'm thinking now this is another big game for Penn State. And so I always look at it from that vantage point, but I think I'm buying in, but I'm also very skeptical still, because we've been down this road before, Scott, and I don't know. Are you? Does it change your mind at all? Are you all in?
I'm not all in, but okay. But I have changed my mind. I mean,
got like one foot in the water, like more than dipping a toe in, or
I'm like, you know, I'm like putting my hand in the water and feeling it, as opposed to ignoring it. You know, before the season. Watching the way that team played last year, I was like, this team's dead team walking. You know, they,
the Wisconsin game was just horrendous. And then, you know, finding COVID-y ways of getting out of Ohio State and Iowa, and they would have lost those games by a combined 100 points, no question, last year. So, to Harbaugh's credit, he basically erased last year, and they're starting over, and they've played well. They've had some really good games and some good wins. And last week, they took advantage of a lot of mistakes by Wisconsin, which is offensively challenged, to say the least.
Yeah.
Their defense is good, but their defense just kind of broke at the end, I think. And but, you know, I also look at, okay, the Rutgers game kind of tells me something too. And I'm also kind of like, well, Rutgers is a much improved team. They play hard. They're going to give you your best shot. So sometimes those games happen too. So I look at Michigan as a minimum and an 8-win team. So that means they're a bowl team. They're a competitive team. They're not what they were last year, but can they take the next step against good to very good teams, you know, Penn State and Ohio State? And then this weekend, which the anomaly that is Nebraska.
The fighting Scott Frosts.
Yeah. I mean, these two teams are so much alike. It's kind of funny because they have such rich traditions. And you look at Nebraska and go, you know, hey, show me what's going on here. You know, don't tell me, just show me. And they kind of have. You know, they looked so bad in the opener against Illinois. And you know, then they played really hard and lost a close game at Oklahoma. All right, give them credit. Michigan State, they should have won. It was a special teams error that cost them. And then last week they blow out Northwestern. Now, I don't think this is a good Northwestern team. Still, you've won 56.
You blow them out, So style points matter,
I think this game is really intriguing to me. And this is one that when we get back from doing our interviews and we type and we'll kind of have our eye up on the screen going, okay. Because if Michigan wins, I think they'll earn it. And I think if Nebraska wins, it kind of says, okay, this is the one challenger in the West to Iowa. And Iowa has to be cognizant of it and could actually set up an interesting Black Friday game, which we really haven't had many of. But.
Well, hey, that's Penn State Michigan State weekend this year.
Yes,
that's Land Grant Trophy game, which in the past is sometimes it's been Rutgers, and that was kind of the not interesting thing. So,
yeah, there were some switcheroos there in the 17 schedule, and then they decided to go back and because they're trying to figure out who should Penn State play.
Who is their rival?
Do they have one? You know,
That whole thing.
Ohio State kind of is, but Ohio State already has Michigan. And, well, it's not Michigan because Michigan has Michigan State. It's not Michigan State because it's like, well, they're not really our rival. And Maryland
and
Rutgers.
It's not Rutgers and it's not Maryland,
You know, that's kind of like, get out of here. You're the Heisman. You know, I'm the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah. It's a very weird setup. And that's kind of been the interesting thing for Penn State is everybody every year points to Ohio State, you know. And obviously recent history backs that with these teams too. But yeah, the rest of the way for the Nittany Lions, I'll put it this way, Scott. If Penn State gets a spot in the college football playoff, they will have earned it with this schedule. I mean, it's just really crazy to see a schedule like this. But hey, Saturday night, or I guess late afternoon, I think we're going to be in for another classic, I think.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm excited to see it. I think it's going to be a terrific game. Certainly the atmosphere will be outstanding. There's no question.
Penn State had that. Yeah, they did it last week. Yeah.
You know, Penn State, well, Iowa has started the stripe outs, in 2010 against Penn State, and then they do it every year. And it seems like Penn State's always been the team because they usually play them at night, and they like having that night aurora. Yeah. Well, this year, they wanted this game at night in the worst way. Everybody did. The administration did. And Fox, you know, said, well, we'll give it to you at 3. We'll make it because we got to have our big noon kickoff. And of course, you know, Ohio State had an 11 o'clock kickoff. And they don't want to, you know, you don't want to go against Ohio State in ratings, even if you're the best game in the country. So that's why this one's at 3.
I thought they were just trying to be nice to us, Scott. I thought that was, you know. A little concern for the beat writers.
So that way you don't have one of your 6 a.m. flights after leaving the hotel or leaving yeah, Kinnick at one.
The Eastern Iowa airport, I don't think I've ever seen it after a night's sleep, so this could be a first for me.
Yeah, they've done some new work. I was a little surprised. It's
really
the other last week was the first week I'd been there, and since COVID and the remodel, and I'm like, wow, okay, this is different. I still know where I'm going. It's not that hard to find, but
is there this you would know this from Cedar Rapids to Iowa City. One of the Penn State beat writers was telling me that he's a little worried there's some construction or something. Is this a thing?
Yeah, there is, but it's more in the interchange between I-80 and I-380. So it really won't impact you.
Okay. Well, that's all that matters, right, Scott. As long as it doesn't impact me, we're fine.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. That's what it always comes down to.
Yeah, and that's the only important thing. That's why.
Good. No traffic concerns.
Yeah, they should call us for kickoff times, mm-hmm. and things like that. It's we the media. The evil media. No, well, this has been fun. I look forward to seeing you this weekend. And we wanted to, as always, wanted to thank you, our legends and listeners, for spending some time with us and adding us to your podcasting rotation. Please subscribe, rate, and review us. 5 stars, just like Ari's favorite top prospects, or 3 stars like what I was doing to win the game. So for Audrey Snyder, this is Scott Dockerman. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.